This is The Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Bob Barrett. Despite the increasing visibility of LGBTQ people in American culture, our understanding of bisexuality remains superficial at best, and young people are increasingly rejecting traditional labels altogether. So who is bisexual? Is being bisexual a matter of identity and lifestyle, or is it rooted in biology? To find some answers to these questions, Rich Savin Williams sought out the voices and stories of dozens of Gen Z and millennial young adults from a range of racial, ethnic, and social class groups whose understanding of what it means to be bisexual defies not only traditional views, but the very notion of attaching a label to sexuality. The result is the new book. It's called Bi, Bisexual, Pansexual, Fluid, and Non-Binary Youth. Dr. Rich Savin Williams is Professor Emeritus of Developmental and Clinical Psychology at Cornell University. He is the author of 9 previous books, including Mostly Straight, Sexual Fluidity Among Men, and The New Gay Teenager. I asked him how he approached this new book.
Well, I have to admit that it took me several years between books because I needed to go back and read everything I could about bisexuality. And in the process, I also interviewed a lot of young men and women about their sexual and romantic history. And it just turned out that a fair number of them said that the gender of the person didn't matter so much. So I thought, here's a book, but I've got to get prepared for it.
And who did you speak to? Where did you find these people and take in their stories?
Well, I went to both to where I teach at the time at Cornell University, but I also went to other college campuses and some high school. There were some homeschooled youth. So it was quite a diverse group of young people. So I got some of the mix, but clearly I make no assertions that I got a representative sample of young people.
Did you find a theme? A common theme in these stories?
I found a very strong theme, which caused me some hesitation to publish some of these. But they're very clear for them was that they do not like adult conceptions of sexuality. They really do not like the boxes that we provide for them in terms of surveys or when we ask them, you know, we give them 3 options. Are you gay, bi, or straight? And for many of them, that is a very complicated question because they don't identify themselves or would describe themselves in any of those 3 boxes. Bisexual was preferred over the other 2, but there was a lot of resistance to the word bisexual because of sort of stereotypes about bisexuality. They seemed to think at times that the assumption was that you were equally attracted to both sexes. When in reality, they might be quite fluid, preferring one sex over another, but maybe not always, or depended on the week or the month or the day, or it depended on the gender of the person, how masculine they were or how feminine they were. So they didn't find themselves fitting into our boxes. And that was very clear. And there was a real sense of sort of resentment, too, that they were asked to do this. And these are primarily millennials and Zoomers, Generation Z. So we'll have to see how the upcoming young people will describe themselves and their behavior.
I'm going to ask about the labels in just a bit. But first, is coming out among these young people still a thing? There was one story in the book where you told about a woman who came out to her mother and said, I don't need to tell anybody else. They can all deal with it.
It is true that many of them would come out to parents, but clearly they would come out to friends and to each other long before their parents in most cases. And when they came out to parents, the problem sort of became for many of them is that they didn't quite know how to say the words, and they would describe maybe their behavior, such as, I'm interested in dating either men or women. It depends somewhat on the person. And so they were hesitant to use the labels because, for example, if they were to say bisexual, then there are some examples that I give in the book of parents, usually the mother, who says something like, well, if you're bisexual, then you can be heterosexual. You know, you can prefer the gender opposite of yours. So I think there's some hesitation because they fear that the parents won't understand or accept however they want to describe themselves.
The very title of your book, Bi, which is Bisexual, Pansexual, Fluid, and Non-Binary Youth, have a whole bunch of labels in there. In the book, you talk about plurisexual people. And is it getting to the point there'll be so many labels where we'll just ditch them altogether?
I hope so. I think that most of the young people did not particularly believe it was necessary to identify themselves. And I sometimes would wait very long in my interview before I actually ask them a question like, do you have a particular identity that you believe matches what you feel is your authentic self? And some would say, well, I'm not quite sure, but I guess if I have to choose something, I would pick such and such. So I would hope that we will get to some point where the sexual label, the sexual identity, doesn't mean much, that it becomes insignificant, and that we treat people, lo and behold, like they're people and not as if they fit into certain kinds of boxes, as they would say.
This is just speculation, but if you were to write this book and use older subjects, how different a book would it be?
It would definitely be a different book because I do not believe that the individuals I would interview, you know, such as my generation or one right below me, would have these kinds of labels, or I don't think that they would object particularly. I think I would get fairly few individuals who would say they are bisexual, either because they are hesitant to use that word or they hold certain kind of stereotypes that they don't want to adopt. And indeed, when you look at the national statistics and you find roughly, depending on the national survey, somewhere between 3% and 5% of adults identify as bisexual. In my book, I note the different ways in which we lose some of the real bisexuals, not maybe by identity, but by behavior or attractions. And I'm estimating, actually, it's a probably somewhere around 25% of the population would fit under a very large definition of bisexual.
Isn't that label, however, by some older people of the community seen as a cop-out?
Well, definitely there is some real resistance to getting rid of the word bisexual, and others who would say we need to not label ourselves that way. There are certainly adults who believe that bisexual is a null category, except for among women. We can accept women being bisexual, but we have a hard time imagining that guys are really bisexual. They're just going toward gayness, and bisexual gives them supposedly an out, if you will. I do believe that a lot of adults do not understand the labels that young people are using for themselves or the descriptions. And I think that's one reason why there are these terms, which is sort of the large overarching phrases, if you will, including plurisexual, or is pansexual the larger, or is bisexual the larger. I don't think the youth really care about that argument one bit, but they noted that this is out there at least.
Again, you spoke with very young people for this book, so I'm assuming that almost all of them were students. How are schools adapting to this new, and I'm calling it new, I imagine it's been around forever, but it's the new way of labeling this and the new way of accepting this?
Well, I think a lot of schools would just prefer to avoid the whole subject. if it has the word sex in it, then they would prefer to delete that from their from the lexicon. But I do believe that a lot of schools at least will have on record as saying they are not in favor of discrimination, and so that they are sort of equal providers, if you will, and they won't tolerate bullying or certain kinds of words to describe various forms of sexuality. So I think most schools would prefer to avoid the topic. I asked the question for all of the youth about how they found out about sex, their sex education. Many of them, not all, but many of them had some school-based, it could be a film, it could be a video, it could be one day, It could be 1 week. It could be a month. It could be a semester. It could be a one-shot thing, and most likely that was the case. Very few of the youth reported that they had a sex education class in two different grades. And sometimes the course was what I would consider to be too late. Several described that they took a course on biological puberty and so forth after most of the kids had already passed through puberty. So that wasn't particularly helpful for them because it didn't prepare them for anything. And none of the youth, as far as I can recall, none of the youth said anything at all about their school mentioning other forms of sexuality other than heterosexuality. So as they described things, most of the schools did not take labels or anything that would relate to gay or bisexual issues into consideration.
As you listen to these stories, are the stories very different through different socioeconomic or racial backgrounds?
Well, I had a good blend of social class differences, and there was definitely a variation there. Most of the what I would consider to be low, middle, or even sort of poverty level, most of them did not go to a school where there's almost any kind of sex education at all. It was very remote or pretty peripheral to what they were going through. But it was striking to me that one thing that did not vary by class or by race or by region, and that was the silence of parents to having a sex talk. So there were very few parents who spoke to their young person at all about sex. And, you know, I give several examples of a young man who was leaving to go out on a date, and his father said as he was leaving the house, "Be safe." And that's the only time that he ever heard his father say anything at all about sex. And even at the time, he wasn't quite clear what his father meant. He thought he meant his driving abilities. But indeed, it was, you know, do you have condoms or hope you have condoms? I'm not going to speak those words. I'm not going to provide you with any. But there was an almost total lack of parental discussion. It was the rare parent that had a series of discussions, asked questions to probe whether or not their young person, their child, the one that they love, was prepared or not. It's as if they didn't have a sexuality about them for the parent, or they hoped maybe the school would do it. And the school did do it, but they did a very, very poor job. And what wasn't present, of course, in the school class was any sort of tying together of knowledge and emotion and, probing at all. That just didn't occur. And, of course, the youth are left with the social media, and most frequently they were left with porn. Now, I think that probably most parents would not approve of their child learning about sex and romance primarily through porn. And yet, the young person is going to find out. There's just no way that they're going to say, "Oh, sex, I'll wait until I'm 21. They want to know now. And they went to friends, which was not always such great information, but they went to porn. And I don't think that's sort of the ideal from either a parental perspective or a school perspective or probably from anybody's perspective. But it was all that there really was out there for them.
Still to come, our conversation with Rich Savin-Williams continues with the question, are these young people defined by their sexuality? That's next on The Best of Our Knowledge. Got any questions or comments about The Best of Our Knowledge? Send them in. Our email address is knowledge@wamc.org. And if you'd like to listen to this or any past programs again, you can find them online at our flagship station's website. Just go to wamc.org and click on the programs link. And while you're there, subscribe to The Best of Our Knowledge's podcast, or download the WAMC Radio app to listen on demand anytime, anyplace. This is The Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Bob Barrett, and our guest today is Dr. Rich Savin-Williams, Professor Emeritus of Developmental and Clinical Psychology at Cornell University, and author of the new book called Bi, Bisexual, Pansexual, Fluid, and Non-Binary Youth. It's obvious from reading the stories in the book that sexuality and sexual identity are very important in the lives of these students. But does their sexuality define who they are?
Most of them were not defined by their sexuality. And that's one reason why even though when they volunteered, you know, it was clear that it was going to be about their friends and lovers and sex and romantic life. So I think that they were certainly sort of prepared for the discussion that we had. But very few sort of defined themselves that way. I think that, you know, they talked about their art or they talked about some of their classes. So I think that there was a way in which it was just one part of their life. And, you know, that for some it was very, very important, especially if they were sort of resisting, for example, their same-sex attractions or weren't quite clear what they meant for their future. I will say that almost all of them, when I asked a question of at what age do you expect to be married or at least have that area of your life settled, almost all of them said 30, and yet they would say 30. They were more certain about the age than they were about whether it would be a male or a female. So, and they realized, of course, that either was an option, and all of them said if it was a male, that'd be fine. You know, the guys, or if a woman, they said, yeah, it'd be fine if it was a woman. But age 30, once, you know, they had to reach a certain age in their own mind about that issue.
Well, you know, after age 30, your life is over anyway, right?
I guess so. I guess that's what they were envisioning. Their career was really, if I were to say what was the most important thing to them, they were really thinking about their career in whatever its complexity. And if I'd probably advertise for, you know, if you're thinking about your career, I'd like to interview you about that. I think I probably would have gotten far more individuals asking that kind of question and were uncertain about that. Because most of these young people, they knew what they were inside. I mean, they didn't always have labels for them. But, you know, I asked them the question, if you could change, if you could take a magical pill, would you change? And almost no one said yes. They were, you know, because it wouldn't be them if they took a magical pill and changed to something else. So I think in that sense, they were very happy with where they were. They might have wished that they might have been born totally gay or totally straight. But on the other hand, they said, you know, the way I am is the way I am. And when I asked the question, how did you get that way? The ones who responded to that question with an answer almost all said biology. I was born that way and I can't change. Very few said it was because of some environmental event, such as child abuse or, you know, being bullied or whatever. But the more telling thing for me, and I think this is something that they would be put at odds with older adults, is their answer basically was, I don't care. That's not an important question to me. However, I mean, it's maybe is intellectually interesting, but for all of them, by and large, they just said, whatever. I am what I am, and, you know, I have to live that kind of a life, and I don't want to change that kind of a life.
What, if anything, does science say about this? Is there still research going on into bisexuality or pan or fluid or whatever?
Well, most of the research, the scientific research, is focused on trying to find I'll call it the gay male gene. We seem less interested in how women got to be the way they are. But that doesn't say that they haven't pursued it, and they're not really finding, you know, sort of a gene or the genes. Most of the evidence at this point seems to indicate that there are multiple genes. Is it 20? Is it 40? Is it 100 that determines sexual orientation? And I think there's some ideas out there. Well, could it be the case that let's just imagine that there are, you know, 20 genes that influence sexual orientation. Well, what if you only get 10 of those? Does that mean you'll be bisexual? And that has been proposed. But on the other hand, other people say, well, it's not how many genes, it's particular genes. And we have no idea about that. You know, we're still in the infancy. And again, the young people were not at all interested in that question, except if they were sort of involved in science or had that wonderment about how people get to be the way they are.
Well, taking a look at the way attitudes towards LGBT people have evolved over the past, say, 25 years, look ahead 25 years, will there even be labels? Will we even care?
Well, I think the revolution has been astonishing. I mean, when I began this research, I could never have imagined that we would be where we are today. I would have hoped we would be where we are today, but I think I had very few beliefs that we would have come this far so quickly. I think that eventually we will get to the point where the young people will be in control, and I think that they will probably be the dominant factors in these issues of sexual and romantic orientations. And I think that the labels will fall by the wayside eventually. I think that they will still hold some meaning for people. I mean, for example, right now, I hear a lot of people say the word gay, not to refer to gay males, but to refer to all people who aren't straight. And so already I think there's a blurring of lines. I seldom hear the word lesbian among young people talked about. I mean, they know it's a word and a name, but I don't, you know, I interviewed young women and very, very few of them used the word lesbian. And when I asked them, it was like, well, you know, I don't like the ring of it. It sounds kind of clinical, or it has some stereotypes that I'm not really fond of. But, yeah, I'm only attracted to women. But they would not or did not want to use certain words. So I think it's hard to see what the words are. I mean, I could never have imagined that queer would be a word that would have some positive ring to it and include not just people with same-sex attractions, but also include straight people who have a sensitivity and acceptance, who want to be part of this larger sort of culture. And so they might use the word queer, but you can't assume that they're attracted to same-sex others necessarily. So the words, the labels, they change. Again, I would hope that we will get beyond this phase in our development, that we have to use terms and labels.
Again, the name of Rich Savin-Williams' new book is Bi, Bisexual, Pansexual, Fluid, and Non-Binary Youth. It's published by NYU Press. From our conversation with Dr. Savin-Williams, we learned how important friends and peer groups can be in the lives of LGBTQ young people. But even more important for good mental health and happiness is support from their parents. That's the topic of today's Academic Minute.
Not all parents know how to support their LGBTQ youth. I'm Dr. Lynn Pascarella, president of the Association of American Colleges and Universities. And today on the Academic Minute, Joshua Goodman, assistant professor of psychology, examines an online intervention tool that can help.
In 2016, the National Institutes of Health recognized sexual and gender minority populations as a health disparity population due to higher rates of depression, suicide, anxiety disorders, and substance use disorders compared with their heterosexual and cisgender peers. We know that it's important to support LGBTQ people's mental health directly. For example, by helping them to form more positive attitudes about their sexual orientation or gender identity. It is also important to create a more supportive environment for them to live in, and research shows that there is no space as important as the family environment. The data are stark. LGBTQ youth whose families support them fare much better in terms of mental health compared to those whose families reject their sexual orientation or gender identity. Parents of LGBTQ youth typically love their children and want what is best for them, but sometimes struggle with their reactions to their child coming out or aren't sure how to be supportive. Recently, I developed and tested an online intervention to help parents of sexual minority youth learn about strategies from psychological research for supporting their child's sexual orientation. The intervention is interactive. It includes videos, self-reflection exercises, and writing suggestions for a fellow parent seeking to support their LGBTQ child. Parents found the intervention to be helpful and engaging and were highly motivated by what they learned. For parents who felt highly distressed about their child's sexual orientation, the intervention helped them to feel more confident and likely to engage in supportive parenting practices. I'm currently working on expanded applications of this intervention and starting to look at other forms of parent support that can be addressed, such as the use of a transgender child's chosen name and correct pronouns. Ultimately, my hope is that this support will help parents as they adjust to their child's LGBTQ identity, and that the child will benefit too.
That was Joshua Goodman of Rhodes College. You can find this, other segments, and more information about the professors at academicminute.org.
The Academic Minute is a production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio, in partnership with the Association of American Colleges and Universities.
That's all the time we have for this week's program. If you'd like to listen again, join us online at our flagship station's website. Go to WAMC.org and click on the programs link. While you're there, subscribe to our podcast or browse through any of the other WAMC or National Productions podcasts. You're sure to find something you'll find interesting. And if you have any questions or comments about our program, send them in. Our email address is knowledge@wamc.org, and you can find us on Twitter at @TBOOKnowledge. I'm Bob Barrett. Be sure to join us next time for another edition of The Best of Our Knowledge.
Bob Barrett is producer of The Best of Our Knowledge. Dr. Alan Chartok is executive producer. The Best of Our Knowledge is a production of WAMC Radio's National Productions, which is solely responsible for its content. Hear more at WAMC.org.